I find value in lenders that are educators, and whether that's on social media or just, you know, making your follow-up calls and reaching out and saying, hey, here's where the landscape is, email marketing, those type of things. That's a huge advantage to us because it's just, we try to stay on top of it. You guys are in it day to day. So lenders that are educators, definitely.
Yeah. There's days where I feel like we're as much bond traders as we are. Have to track the market in a different way than we ever had to.
A few weeks ago, I had the pleasure of hosting two housing professionals at our office, our Housing Wire office here in Dallas, to record a really fun podcast conversation. So when you bring a loan originator, a real estate agent, and a housing media executive into one room on a Friday afternoon, what do? You open a bottle of wine, turn on the camera, turn on the microphones, and have a great conversation. In this podcast, I have the pleasure of featuring Kyle Baugh, a realtor at Compass here in Dallas, where he leads the BBR group, and Dan Carson, Senior Vice President and Producing Area Manager at Origin Point. Dan and Kyle know each other. All three of us know each other. So it's a pretty natural conversation. And what I really hope to bring forward in this podcast is more information about the realtor and agent partnership, what they expect from each other, and how they can drive success and business for each other. But we dive deeper than that. We talk about the housing market at a national level, as well as here in Dallas. We even bring some research and data from Altos Research into the equation. More data, less vibes, as our VP of product, Holden Page, likes to say. We go deeper too. We talk about AI. We'd all just come off attending Tom Ferry's Success Summit, where Jason Pantana gave a great presentation about applications for AI and real estate and mortgage. So there's some great information revealed in this episode, but Jason really has all the expertise. And finally, we talk more about what Kyle and Dan expect in the coming year and how they're preparing their businesses to be successful in Q4 2023 and 2024. I hope you enjoy this episode, which we've unofficially coined a realtor, an LO, and a media exec walk into a bar and happen to have a great bottle of cab while they're doing it. Enjoy the episode.
We're back for my favorite type of podcast, one we get to record in person, not something I get to do very often. Kyle, Dan, welcome, guys.
Thanks. Thanks for having us.
So I'm going to set the stage for why the three of us are having this conversation. So Kyle Baugh, realtor at Compass, focused here in the Dallas market. Full disclosure, Kyle has helped me on three transactions in our relationship.
Absolutely.
So thrilled to have my own realtor here in the office with me. Well, Kyle, welcome.
Thank you. I'm grateful to be here. I mean, so many good realtors in Dallas, and thankful to be here. So.
And Dan Carson, SVP, Producing Area Manager at Origin Point. Sorry I haven't sent you any business, but I'm thrilled to have you as a friend, Dan.
But that's my whole thing. Is like, it's not always about like getting business from people. Relationships matter. So I'm glad to be here. And same thing with Kyle. Kyle and I actually, we've done transactions together, but he's always been the listing agent.
So Dan, you and I met initially with your last lender, Willow Bend. I'm excited to hear, before we kind of jump into the topics for today, tell us a little bit about your path in mortgage. Like, how has your career brought you to this point at Origin Point?
Well, I've had kind of a unique career in mortgage because I didn't start off just like jumping in. I didn't work on a lending team and work my way up. I actually started off kind of like the executive route and kind of worked my way backwards. I was a recruiter, a third-party recruiter, did executive placements. This was right after the crash and Dodd-Frank had gone through. And there was a large national bank that had assumed one of the mortgage companies, that they had the whole implodometer and everything that was going on. So I entered a market that was very similar to the one that we're in today as a recruiter in the mortgage space. So I lived in Dallas. I was working up and down the Pacific Northwest and all the way down to San Diego. Like, so pretty much anything that touched PCH, I was recruiting for that company there, trying to help build non-bank footprint. And moved over to a local lender in Dallas. It's actually a big national player. And I got to the point where I recruited, I was helping with strategy, helping set new markets. And through that time, I decided that I was like, man, I really enjoy my interactions with these loan officers and people, and got an opportunity to help lead a local mortgage company. And during that, I said, hey, while I'm helping kind of restructure this company, I need to be licensed. I need to start putting loans into the system. I need to understand how everything works for the loan originators here. And it turned into, well, I actually like doing the loans as much as I do, like doing anything else and helping people buy their homes.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. It's one of the fun parts of my role here at HousingWire, a leader, but I also get to, like, you know, get my hands dirty and do the content like we're doing today. So it's I understand the draw of not wanting to just be in management. Kyle, you and I got to spend some time together this week. So we're actually recording this on Friday afternoon after Tom Ferry's Success Summit. We may or may not be having a glass of wine while we have this conversation, against all of our better judgment after a conference week. Kyle, tell us about Success Summit. How was Tom Ferry's event for you?
It was great. I've known about Tom Ferry for a very long time. I think I went to one of his seminars maybe 10 years ago, but just started coaching here a year ago. And so in the program, I've been to a couple small events, but it was impressive. I've been to a lot of, I was with Sotheby's and now Compass. I've been to a lot of those conventions and industry conventions, but I think it was one of the best. The content was incredible. Tom's just such a good presenter and performer, connector. It was almost hard to miss certain times in the conference because everybody was really just really strong presenters. So.
Yeah, folks that come to Success Summit are there to learn. They stay in their seat. It's not leave the stage and go out and take meetings in the conference hall. It's people that are glued in, taking notes. Tom's got some great catchphrases, but like one of my favorites is like, take out a piece of paper and write this down. Yeah. And like people take out their notebook and write it down.
Yeah,
like,
that's true.
The whole time people are writing and taking pictures of the slides, pictures of the stage, really engaging event. So a year into coaching on the back end of Success Summit, what's changed in your business? Like how has coaching helped you, as a real estate professional?
Sure. I think, a lot of it, I mean, as you know, everybody's aware, middle of last year, interest rates went up and everybody from the realtor perspective and lending perspective kind of had to get back to basics. And so, you know, part of that was the motivation, the accountability for coaching. I did some research on different coaching companies and honestly, I really liked everything that Tom Ferry offers. And I liked the network and they have so many good coaches and you can kind of bounce around based on what works great for you. So I think just to get that motivation, get back on track.
So motivation is a big part of it.
Sure.
For you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I've done coaching before with other coaching programs and it always just kind of keeps you scheduled and back on track. And with Tom Ferry, one of the other great things about the summit was, building more referral networks and relationships.
Yeah. I was taking writing out every word Jason Fantana said about like AI and marketing strategy.
Yeah.
He's like his like the 10 AI tools that he walked through in his presentation on Wednesday.
Yeah.
Like it was like honestly mind blowing. Like we're sitting here with like these fancy mics and lights and cameras. And he's like, you can do all of this from your iPhone and here's the tools to do it. I'm like, okay, maybe we should do that way.
It was wild. I think that's probably the biggest, I kind of wrote down my big takeaways and the AI was for sure the biggest takeaway. It seems like he had mentioned what it was like in the past, but I think a year from now, 2 years from now, we're going to be looking back and be like, how did we not do this? Or how do we not know this? And it's a pivotal point. And I think part of that too, is if you can incorporate it, you can be on the front end of the AI change in the market.
So. What were the main points where the AI is useful to where it's like, you think it's going to be impactful?
It was really, I think what was incredibly impressive, and he was referencing apps and different avenues, was from start to finish, whether you're doing videos, whether you're got like YouTube scripts, if you're following up with clients, there's an app that you can go in, you can make yourself more efficient. He was doing that one where you can essentially record yourself and create like this persona of yourself. And you can just basically type things in and it'll just start talking like you're talking. And he did it on stage and it was pretty humble. And perfect inflection.
So the other like tools that were shared and like a lot of this was just done in ChatGPT. And he also announced a new tool, Tom.ai, which I can't give you the full description of yet. I think it's in beta, but essentially ChatGPT, leveraging all of like Tom's like database of like coaching content, like the proprietary stuff. But what was really cool, one of the other examples Jason shared was the ability to use AI to identify trends. So like I dropped in the names of 10 of our speakers and attendees for Housing Wire Annual and said like, hey, what do these people have in common? It identified that they were all mortgage and real estate execs. And I said, what do they care about? Like, what are their values and what do they like need for their business? And I got a list of like 10 things that these 10 people have in common and care about. Yeah. And then said, how do I translate these commonalities into event marketing messaging? And like, so I can bring like what they value into my copy for our event marketing. I was like, that is smart. So like there was a application that Jason was getting like, or an application of this like technique that Jason was itching toward is like, so Kyle, you have a specialty in East Dallas. Mm-hmm. So like what stops you from taking three addresses in Lakewood and saying, hey, what do these three listings have in common? Like maybe three addresses, houses that moved very quickly. Uh-huh. And the listing descriptions might all mention that they have a pool floor plan or marble counters or something.
Yeah.
And like, what do they have in common? How quickly, like which one moved the fastest? And like, how can I model a new listing description off of that one that was marketed really well? So like finding like trends of success and then translating it to like new marketing strategies is where Jason like really impressed me.
Yeah. No, that's incredible. I mean, I think, you know, obviously the biggest thing to learn from that is how you can just take all that information and to your point, just utilize different avenues to get you to that point.
Yeah. And faster. Versus sitting down by yourself for half an hour and like trying to thinking through like how you're going to market a property or market an event or whatever you're like trying to sell or all trying to sell something. Having a partner, AKA the AI, like talk through scenarios. I thought it was cool.
What's crazy about all that is it knows what people want more than what we do.
It makes you feel like you're just a number.
But it's scary to me because then it's like, you know, at what point do we start losing some of the originality of like who we are and how we position things?
But I mean, that's where if do you let AI do the work for you or do you use it as like framework and architecture so you can like customize and move faster? And I think the day you like start letting AI do the work for you, then that's probably a problem. And there's holes in that, right? Like it's not perfect, but to be seen.
I feel left out. I wish I would have gone. I didn't even know this was going on.
I'll send you the content.
Yeah.
That's like maybe another mistake Tom's making.
Yeah.
Dan, there was 4,000 real estate agents in one room in downtown Dallas yesterday. You weren't there.
I wasn't there.
It should have been like loan originator heaven.
I was because it was my first summit. I did not know. It was 5,100. It was wild.
Well, I'm sure that there were loan officers there. It's not just that they were all there. It's like they're getting really like valuable tools that we should know because part of our job is to help Kyle and other agents like do more production and make their lives better by us working with them.
So, it's knowledge that mortgage folks should be taking to their agent partners, but it's also knowledge that's transferable across any business. I'm there as a sponsor. We had a booth for Real Trends in Altos, but like I'm in there taking notes, taking pictures. Kristen, my assistant who's helping us record today, was sitting next to me like, we can use this for that. And it's not just it's general business knowledge. No. It's cool. So Dan, as we were getting ready for this conversation, you mentioned that you are you're investing in your health and mindset right now to get ready for 2024. How are you thinking about keeping your mindset in the right place and what exactly are you getting ready for?
Well, you know, we're coming off of, you know, two and a half years of the best, the mortgage will ever be, from a production standpoint, from a profitability standpoint. And the last year has been complete stark contrast to that. And so now what we expect heading into 2024 is, while it's still going to, the market's not going to be what it was during the COVID years. But I think that we're going to see a different kind of market than what we've experienced the last 12 months. It's been challenging. It's very cutthroat. You're seeing a lot of lenders. Just now, we're starting to see more companies exit the market. You're starting to see a lot of people that jumped in during that time frame are getting out of the business now.
Yeah.
I'm sure everybody knows somebody that was like, oh, I'm going to go be a loan officer. And they did it for a little bit. And now they're not a loan officer anymore.
Okay. I mean, I spent half of 2021 asking myself, why am I running a media company?
I could be doing loans. But it's challenging in a different way, because with all the rising interest rates and affordability, some of the data that you're going to share with us later, all those things combined makes our job hard. Our job is really hard. And so we have to be mentally prepared to, one, I think with the exodus from the business, the people that are going to, that are doing a good job, they're going to get more business. And while we may be down, you know, I think on average, most companies are probably 40%, I would say. I don't know the hard data on that, but I'm guessing it's close to 35 to 45%.
It depends where they were in purchase and refi mix. So like purchase is down nationally around 20%. Around 20%. Refi is down 85 or something.
Completely gone.
So like it depends on the mix.
On the mix. And, you know, we're probably from last year, I'd say we're probably somewhere in that 20 to 25% range in terms of our decrease in volume, and which I feel is pretty good, because we moved to a different company. We had a lot of change and we're still able to keep up. And, and in the previous year, we were actually up in a down year. Yep. So I think that what we're prepping for is a market that's going to see, while it's going to be probably more competitive than it is now, I think that there's going to be a lot more volume, because I think that we're going to start seeing some triggering events that's going to create more inventory, especially here in Dallas, because the Dallas market, if you compare us to across the country, we are probably still the shortest, like in terms of inventory. Mm-hmm. I would guess we have the lowest inventory of any major metro area.
Yeah, it's we'll go into days on market a minute in Dallas. Yeah. But so Dan, can you give us a glimpse in for your team? What does production look like? How's your team structured? Like, kind of give us a view into kind of the quantified performance that you're driving.
Yeah. So our group typically does $250-300 million in mortgages a year.
Okay.
And that's with anywhere from 8 to 10 loan officers. So each of them are doing a pretty good volume. And that's because we're set up to where our loan officers can spend time helping people with their business, working with their customers. And we have a support staff on the back end that's, dealing with the documentation, kind of, they're dealing more with the details so that we can work in the big picture. I think that, consistently, with the market doing what it's doing, you're going to have to do more volume to basically make the same level of profits that you had previously. Yeah. So that's why we're just gearing up to where we can spend more time having meetings, just talking strategy, building relationships with our realtors and our partners, and then also doing things with our customers, because we're very much a purchase oriented. We depend on the realtor lender relationship to be successful, but we're also starting to do more to where we can generate more referrals directly from our client base and from local connections so that we can get more back to our referral partners
too. Okay. So do you have originators in brick and mortar tell me the origination strategy and kind of how you're bringing business in the door today. And then I'd love to go deeper into that consumer direct or like long-term relationship that you're building.
So yes, everybody's brick and mortar. So we're in office. We have, loan officers that come in every day. We have some loan officers that work from home. We have some loan officers that work out of a real estate office. We're spending time in different office spaces. So we're brick and mortar and, our staff is there, 9 to 5, but we also have technology to where, sitting here now, I could, if you said you wanted to do a loan application, I could do a loan application. I could pull your credit. I could run automated.
Kyle, you got a house we can buy and we do a loan. We just do it right here.
We could literally sit here. I could fully originate.
Wave inspection.
I could fully originate from my phone and send you a pre-approval from my phone. Technology wise, we're able to do our job anywhere. So, which is pretty neat, but we are still firm believers in being in the office. COVID hit, I think we were 2 weeks out of the office and everybody said, hey, this is our group here because we're more successful by driving each other and pushing each other to like, hey, pick up the phone, make the next call, set the next meeting, like do what you got to do. Yeah. We're pretty aggressive on that front. So, and staying in the office, but we're in office together. We're in real estate offices.
Okay. And so talk more about the relationship you're trying to build with clients. That's actually another Tom Ferry point. He yesterday, this week, he vetoed the phrase past clients. Like, these are your clients, not your past clients. Wow. So tell us about the long-term relationship with clients.
So we do a lot. There's kind of the potential clients, and then there's the past clients.
You can't use past. It's
So clients, your clients.
Okay. Client for life.
So the clients for life. We do a lot post-closing to help. You know, we keep up with their equity position and their property. We give them, they basically have a full digest that's sent to them monthly with market data, intel.
Do you use like a HomeBot or something
like that? Yeah, we use HomeBot. Okay. But I also do like a personal letter that I send out as well. We try to talk to every single one of our customers at least, you know, once a quarter, if not twice a quarter, like from an individual touch point. Text message, do something.
That's high touch.
So we keep up with, you know, anniversaries, mortgage anniversaries, birthdays, everything. So we stay on top of that. One thing that we just recently started doing is like, we're doing more with the clients, like to celebrate them. So when they close, like, you know, we're like, hey, let's have a housewarming party with your neighbors. Like, so we get to infiltrate their spheres. Yeah. So doing things to where it's like doing more. Hey, who's your employee? Who's the head of HR at your employer? We would love to come talk about home ownership with your company. So we're doing everything we can to try to get in front of the consumer in a natural way. And so that builds more referrals long term.
I was at the Keller Williams mega camp in August, and there was a broker or an agent who shared a tactic that she uses. And I wish I remembered her name, what market she was in, but she shared this on stage that she hosts a margarita party as a housewarming party for all of her buyers.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like it's a party in a pack now. She's like, okay, now what date would you like to schedule your housewarming party? And she brings a margarita machine and queso and tacos. Mm-hmm. And like, shit, not everybody accepts, but like the people that do build this incredible bond with her as an agent and her brokerage. For sure. And she meets all the neighbors. So it's like a huge business development tool.
No, that's great. We've done that in the past where we do housewarming. There's a, we used to do, for nice properties, we would have a personal chef come, and they could invite their friends and neighbors. And then obviously you wouldn't attend as the agent, but like every time you'd hear back that the neighbors, they tell the neighbors and the chef, we knew the chef. So he'd report back to us like who was interested and who wasn't. And so it was just a great touch point after the fact. Yeah.
The chef is actually your transaction coordinator.
Yeah, exactly.
I did not get a chef.
That was a different time frame.
I do remember the closing gift. You got me a Yeti cooler. It was a good one. I think it was filled with some stuff. Too.
Particular for the client. I knew Clay needed a Yeti.
It's gotten a lot of use. So thank you. I appreciate it. All right.
I didn't brand it for you.
You did not. So I need a Kyle Baugh Compass sticker or something for it. Yeah. We'll put that on it. All right, Kyle. So let's talk production. So like we operate Real Trends, tracking agent and team data is something that we care a lot about. Like, tell us about the performance of you and your team, and let's go from there.
Sure. Yeah. So last year, 2022 numbers, our team, we have a team. We're actually kind of, our team is restructuring. So we're kind of breaking away on our own now, but our team in 2022, we did just over $65 million in production. Personally, I did just under $30 million in production with 36 transactions. Our team did about 85 transactions total last year. I will say, obviously, a lot of that was front loaded. You know, from January to May of last year, I mean, it was, you know, gangbusters. I mean, you know, best months of my career. I've been doing it for 11 years. And then, like everybody else this year, I think we're down about 40% this year in terms of transactions and volume. And so, you know, I think Dan's point, we're really looking towards 2024. And the agent, what we've seen is the agents that continue the marketing spend, really continue the follow-up and the touches with your clients, not your past clients, are the ones that come out of it and gain that market share. And all the data and numbers show, I mean, Tom was talking about this too, is you can see year over year when there's downturns that the top agents in the market start getting higher and higher percentages just because, you know.
No, I think there's market share consolidation happening right now. Mm-hmm. And like there's a, I was having a conversation with one of our guests at the Gathering of Eagles, and there's some business models where you don't want to see agent count decrease. But if you're an agent in the market, it's not a terrible thing to see some of like the part-time and like passerby agents who weren't true professionals kind of wash out in a down market.
Yeah, and it's wild. I mean, there's the agents that have been in the business just since COVID and in our office or other offices, and they've never really had to market or work or do follow-up because it just, it was easy during that time period. It just kind of came to them. So different industries. So you're seeing a ton of those people fall off. And I don't know the numbers, but I mean, the percentage of realtors that got on the market during that time frame has been wild. So it's good. It's good to level off a little bit.
I think we'll start to see, it might not be until the beginning of the year when we see like the next National Association of Realtors annual report and see like the membership numbers. There's going to be some movement, but I think the dedicated pros will still be here and hopefully they'll gain some market share. So Kyle, tell us a little bit more. So we know 2023 is tough. We're down about 40%. The conversations that you're having with buyers and sellers, I want to test a theory that we talk about a lot at Housing Wire, mortgage rate lockdown theory. And like people that are, that the theory of mortgage rate lockdown is that someone who has a 3% mortgage rate is unlikely to be a seller. So are you having conversations with folks who maybe would have been a seller in other markets, want to upgrade to that different school district or the extra bedroom, but are hesitant because of the rate environment?
Oh, absolutely. I think the biggest feedback we have from buyers right now is, I mean, even ones that are actively looking, and I think this is a big reason why the numbers are down is because we've got a lot of buyers. Most of them just say, hey, we're in a great position with our, loan amount, and we would move for the right property. It seems like that's always the thing to say. It's like, we're not in a rush to buy, which is, of course, as an agent, we love that, comment, but so we're not in a rush to buy, but if the right property comes along. And so, part of that is really being kind of a boots on the ground and figuring out off market properties and things to really put your buyers in. Some of them just really aren't that serious, and it's going to take a lot more for them to get off the fence and change their interest rate. But, at the end of the day, people are still dying, divorcing, downsizing and all that.
Oh, downsizing. I used to use the three Ds, death, disease, and divorce, and downsizing. We got a friend about that one.
Downsizing, upsizing. I think one of the things actually from the Tom Ferry, somebody had mentioned, they said, if you're getting a divorce, are you going to turn to your wife and say, well, let's stay in the house together for, the next year because our interest rate is 3%.
Apparently that's a thing. Someone was just recently telling me about this big trend of cohabitation.
So it is a thing.
It is a thing. It's 100%.
Wow. That's wild.
Yeah. So I feel like there's probably like a cohabitation, TikTok land that I haven't discovered or something, but I think this is like something people talk about.
But I do think too, that, we have these conversations that in Dallas, the market is still very strong. I mean, one of those reasons inventory is still so low that even if you think, okay, you're going to have this higher interest rate percentage. If you think, hey, we're going to wait a year, we're going to wait 2 years. I mean, like anything in Dallas, nobody in Dallas needs a reason to buy real estate. The minute you have the interest rates start coming down, you have, some good news from the media, is the market's going to be flooded. Yeah. We've seen that over and over again.
Well, you say flooded. You say flooded with?
With buyers.
With buyers. So like, we have this like supply demand imbalance right now. I'm looking at one of our like Altos research reports, and in Dallas, median days on market is 42. And that's median across the market. But when you go down to entry level, which in Dallas is a median price of 269, which that's hard to find in actual the city limits of Dallas. Days on market is 35. Yeah. So like the demand is still, I mean, this is better than national, like national's average or median 49, average 87. So like Dallas is moving faster than the rest of the country, even with the current dynamics.
Oh, absolutely. And honestly, from obviously average data, it's hard it skews a little bit. And I will say Dallas is such a city, DFW and Dallas is such a city of really hot neighborhoods and hot markets. And so, if you look into certain areas like Lakewood or Park Cities or, the suburban draw, so like Frisco or Allen or South Lake, wherever. I mean, I bet if you really pull the majority of the home sales, not the ones that are just overpriced and sit forever, your days on market are probably 20 or less. I mean, things are still moving, especially in the good markets. You know, inventory is obviously one of those big reasons. But I think what you see is some of these outlying areas that aren't within those cores are probably dragging those numbers down a bit. So, it's, you know, but you know, obviously people that aren't in real estate see these numbers and or hear the national media and they think, oh, it's cool. But Dallas is definitely one of those markets that's kind of driving.
And different, like you're pointing out, like Dallas as a city is, you know, it's interesting to look at, but it's really about what happens at the zip code level.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you see a lot that we're still seeing multiple offers. We're still seeing waived appraisal waivers, no contingency offers. So we're underwriting literally everybody up front.
Yeah.
So we have to, so that they have stronger offer positions and they can compete with cash.
Yeah.
It's wild how competitive it still is. So the rate lockdown conversation is one that we have all the time, and there's a cost of opportunity that if you want to move into one of those zip codes, like, or one of those areas that Kyle's talking about, it's going to be 10% more. And so the interest rate that you pay today isn't going to matter if you have a 3% now where you live, because the cost of the home itself is going to increase so much by the time that you're like, oh, rates are in the mid fours or the mid fives. It makes sense. Now you're going to be priced out from a different standpoint.
It's like, I try to wear such like a balanced hat on the the housing market, because it's so easy, you know, as a media professional in housing or as a real estate or mortgage professional to sound like you're cheerleading a market. And like now's a great, I was always a great time to buy. It's a great time to sell too. Exactly. But like when I like honestly look at this market and like agree 100% with where Dan was going, is if we see any interest rate relief, the frenzy on the buyer side is going to be so high. Home price appreciation is going to shoot straight back into that same territory that we saw in 2021 in the first half of 2022. So I think about that, like, is like, it feels, you know, I feel the mortgage rate lockdown pressure of having an extremely low mortgage rate, but at the same time, the jump we eventually want to make, might be like prohibitively expensive by the time we see in a different interest rate environment.
There's, I mean, I to your point, I think, we're all a little guilty of getting fed from certain media that, you know, the real estate market is great in Dallas, but I try to look at it balanced too. And I try to, when I talk to clients, not sound like I'm trying to sell the market, but we've seen it before as well. It's, you know, there's very few clients I have that 6, 7, 8, 9 years ago said, I want to buy a house. And if they didn't do it, that they're saying, oh, that was a good decision. I have to buy it that time. It's like in the Dallas market, no matter what, you're going to look back and be like, oh, I should have bought then. And it just doesn't feel like there's any immediate future, any time frame where you're going to see, you know, big swings or, and none of the data shows it either. So
that's what our lead analyst Logan Motoshami talks about nonstop. It's like demographics. And like, and Dallas is an area where demographics are amplified by inbound immigration and like people moving migration into Dallas and Texas as a whole. So we have this like really big wave of people hitting first time home buying age. 2020 was the peak year of people turning 32 that at the time was the average age of homeownership, first time homeownership. That was beat in 21, beat in 22, beat in 23, and it will beat again in 2024. So this massive wave of people turning like prime home buying age, which is, I think, being delayed a little bit because of the inventory constraints and affordability constraints. But and then we have migration into certain parts of the country, Florida, Texas.
We're still seeing lots of Californians to Texas.
Yeah. How does that impact your, how does inbound migration to Dallas impact your business? And how often do you find yourself working with people that are from Dallas that are upgrading or first time home buyers here versus people that are moving into the marketplace?
Yeah, I would say, I mean, I don't do as much suburban, so I don't get a lot of the like big reload business, which obviously they see.
So they all go to Frisco.
A lot of them go to Frisco. It's like, they say, okay, where's the best or where's the suburb in Dallas where it's got good schools, all this. So I'm sure, you know, and I have helped people in Frisco. I have helped people in Southlake here and there. But I would say from a percentage, we probably get around maybe 20 to 30% moving in from different areas. And the large majority of the time, it's a job transfer, job relocation. And they're, it's not just them. They're taking several people coming into the area. And it doesn't seem like there's any slowdown of that.
Yep.
And usually what we see is it's, depending on the neighborhood, it could be like C-suite executives or people like that are coming in, or potentially they just want to be more in the urban environment where, their colleagues are going up north, something like that.
We actually see a lot of small business owners on the financing side where they're moving their business, and which can be difficult from a financing perspective, because they're like, oh, well, you own a business in New York or New Jersey. Mm-hmm. How's it going to relocate here? But that's, we see a lot of that too. It's like,
we've also seen just people coming for tax reasons.
Yeah, for tax reasons and standard of living.
For employees that are moving for tax purposes or family that are able to work remotely, what is that process? Is there an extra verification step in the underwriting process to like verify that the job doesn't disappear when someone moves to Texas?
Yeah. So when we're doing our verifications, you do have to get a letter from the employer that there's an actual transfer going on. Or if they're remote, they can continue to do their job wherever they are. So, when somebody's relocating, there's other things you have to go through. And especially if it's an employee reload where there's not a relocation company involved, and it's just like they're doing a straight reload on their own. That's where there can be more verification that goes on there.
Interesting. So Dan, you also mentioned that you're doing a lot of underwriting up front to get borrowers or potential buyers completely pre-qualified and ready to be competitive in a purchase market that's been competitive. Can you give us a little bit of a deeper glimpse into your realtor relationship and how you're working with your clients that are searching for homes and the agents that are representing them?
Well, if you go back probably 10 years, somebody goes to a realtor, they start shopping for a home. The lender's the last thing on their mind. They're looking at the house, and then they go to the lender after they found the house, it's identified, then they start shopping. Now it's as soon as they have a referral, we say, hey, get them with us so that we can make sure that you're shopping in the right range, you're looking for the right things, and everybody's doing their shopping up front. They're even shopping their interest rates up front. Mm-hmm. So it's really, in some people will shop up front and you work with them for 6 months and you do all their documentation. You do basically have a full file ready for a closing so that you can offer a 14 to 20 day close.
Yep.
We've had to close loans in as fast as 8 days recently.
And your technology's ready to do that?
Literally just closed one in 8 days. And these aren't just your normal, W-2 borrowers. Wow. This was a bank statement loan that we closed in 8 days.
Do you have a non-QM specialty?
We do a lot of non-QM. I would say self-employed borrowers is something that, especially my team, we do a lot of.
Okay.
It's tricky loans, is figuring out things that other people don't want to take the time to figure out. So unfortunately, that's a lot of my business. I love doing the W-2 customers, like the employees, but
that's actually, it's been a demand wave in this part of the cycle. Yeah. I think so many of the self-employed borrowers and other non-QM categories were ignored by lenders in the heyday of 2021 and 2022. It was too easy
to
do GSE business all day long.
I love the Fannie Freddie business. Day one certain loans, and then the customer, once you get under contract, they shop you again. So it's like you're almost having to sell everybody two or three times, and so you have to be so on top of your communication, make sure your service is so airtight that people don't want to talk to anybody else. I'd say that's the main thing. So it's a much more, and the communication with us is constantly changing because, we're having to do weekly rate checks, like as rates continue to go up, we're having to adjust people's pre-approvals to be like, oh, well, we just lost, $50,000 of buying power, in 2 weeks, and which can happen, depending on price points. And that could be the difference of one neighborhood versus another. And so we're having to be a lot more creative and a lot more conscientious with our communication back and forth. So we make sure that when Kyle puts in an offer, that it's one that we know is going to be, hey, we have at least a week where we're really safe on this offer. Yeah. And then we go police from there. At least a week.
So Kyle, what do you need from a real estate partner? What do you need from a lending partner to send a lot of referral business? Like, what are you looking for? What qualities, like what gets your referral?
Buy us lunch, you know, buy us breakfast. I'm just kidding.
Get out of here.
I'm just kidding. No. Obviously Dan and his team do a great job of this, but one of the biggest things is communication. I think the ones that really do well and have those great relationships with big teams and big agents are the ones that are good communicators, but also good connectors. And you can, if you can offer some form of a value to an agent that they're not used to, I mean, we get, it's like any business. We get calls from lenders all the time trying to win our business. And if you can stand out by just having that strong relationship and being able to kind of connect you within their network and be just a good resource. I think at the end of the day, you know, like you were saying, all lenders, like the minimum is to be able to close on time, to be able to, like you said, close in 14 days or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Everybody offers that. But if you can be that kind of superhero LO that comes in, and if something's bad, I mean, the deals that we remember are the ones that the lender came in if there was an issue or something like that. We didn't even know about it. The client didn't know about it. If you did it on the back end, those are effective, especially, you know, agents that have been doing it a while. I mean, that's key.
Does market knowledge and like market data and trends like help with that relationship? Like when we were getting ready for the show, we were talking about the kind of the average price per square foot in Dallas, and like it's at 261 right now for the Altus report. And I know that's very different in some of the neighborhoods that you do business in. But Dan was talking about the price to build per square foot. It feels like there's a lot of value that can be had between a lender and a real estate partner on like market intelligence. Do you ever find yourself comparing notes on market intelligence, or is that you get enough of it from other places? You don't need your lender partner.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think having that knowledge is great on the lending side. I will say also one of the things what I see a lot of value in is because the landscape does change so frequently, you know, week to week, that as agents, obviously you have a good idea of where the market is in terms of interest rates. But I find value in lenders that are educators, and whether that's on social media or just, you know, making your follow-up calls and reaching out and saying, hey, here's where the landscape is, email marketing, those type of things. That's a huge advantage to us because it's just, you know, we try to stay on top of it. You guys are in it day to day. So lenders that are educators, definitely.
Yeah. There's days where I feel like we're as much bond traders as we are. Have to track the market in a different way than we ever had to, you know, because now the lock, don't lock, float. Wait, like there's so much going on right now that it's hard, and you have to have constant communication to do it.
What tools do you use to watch market movement? And like,
I use MBS Live. Okay. So we have MBS Highway too. You know, kind of take a collection of all the tools. Everybody uses their different stuff.
Yep.
MBS Live is just one that's, and it's not really so much for internal data. It's for, cause they have it's really easy to follow. They've got shareable content that I use, and it's like, it's the average market data and it's right there, and it updates real time. I don't think it's probably not the most sophisticated way, but I'm not the guy that knows how to use AI to like generate a picture of myself and have this conversation. I'm not real tech savvy.
In MBS Live, they've done a great job with the app. Being able to access on the iPhone is awesome.
Yeah.
So that's
one of the I personally use, but we got people on our team that swear by Barry's MBS Highway.
Yep.
And now and I know that Mortgage Coach has their own secondary product tool that's built in. And I've used them all at one point in time, and just like right now, MBS Live is what I'm using. But it's nice, and we have to keep up with it. We have to know. And then on the back end, we actually have a spreadsheet that we update with daily market rates that's cross-referencing where the customers' rates are to see if there's ever a chance for refining, so we built out some internal systems too.
Nice. So. Okay. So I want to hit on one more trend before we close out. So for years, we've been like watching this lingering inventory environment. I think everyone was aware that home builders were not going to bail us out of an inventory crisis. But here in Dallas, new home construction continues to play an increasingly important role in the inventory that's available. Kyle, can you give us a glimpse into some of the conversations or relationships that you've had as a listing agent or a buyer's agent with new home construction? And Dan, give us a glimpse if there's any like new home construction trends that are popping up in your lending business.
I think business, I don't see that as much as some of those suburban agents.
Some of the infill here in Dallas.
Okay, so there's, I mean, and there's a huge amount of infill in Dallas and the neighborhoods we're familiar with, Lakewood, the M Streets, Park Cities, so much so that it's driving these lot values up substantially at a very high pace. Six years ago, you could have got a lot in Lakewood for $300,000. Now it's like $750,000 for a lot. So building costs are driving up, which in turn is driving the new construction price up of properties. But there's definitely, a conversation to be had with a lot of clients that they are considering new build versus resale properties. And I think for a lot of people, it makes good sense. But one thing I will say is because of those construction costs, it's driving those prices pretty high. With the current interest rate environment, it is, making it a little harder for some people. It seems like builders keep, building and buying. They just
keep moving.
I mean, days on market. I will say it feels like that new construction, and this is just kind of a feeling of the market, is new construction sales days on market seems to be a lot less than certain areas of resale.
New home construction also gets the benefit of like an unlisted marketing period. Like when you see a builder building a house, I'm watching houses that might ever go up for 6 months. Like that is going to hit the market at some point. So like there's it's like pre-marketing without the MLS clock starting to tick.
That's a good point.
Yeah. And the new construction stuff that you deal with is different than most because it's going to be builder buys lot, builds a spec home and then sells that property, which is a completely different process, but it's the same experience from an inventory standpoint, like what you're talking about is the market piece. I don't know if you guys saw, Buffett just made a major investment in the three
home builders.
And so he typically has a pretty good idea of what's going to be going on in the market. Mm-hmm. And I think that's like, especially in Dallas, we're going to continue to see, and it's all based off the home builders that build affordable housing as well. Because that's like, when you look at the Dallas inventory, that's our biggest problem. But then again, you run into Dallas County in general, you got one individual that owns probably 90% of all the vacant land Dallas County. And I don't need to say who it is or anything like that. But when you have that,
it's you. No, you own all the land.
I wish. But it's not got a great retirement plan. it's going to create, it's going to be 10 years until we're anywhere close to building at the pace of inventory. It's going to take the F word, for us to get anywhere close to the inventory needs that we have in Dallas.
Well, I think what we're approaching now is
foreclosure.
I got it.
That's for everyone else. I didn't know you guys.
Dan's been in the industry for a hot minute. Yeah. He remembers 2009. Yeah. What we're starting to approach now is social pressure on affordability, and I think one of the things that's really holding up home construction, infill, and suburbia is municipal regulation, availability of water and infrastructure and healthcare. I understand healthcare is one of the things that's holding up the continued sprawl north on 75. And in Dallas is like, you need a hospital and that'll come.
It's true. And even like you said, the municipal side of things, it's even time. Like how long it takes to get a project approved now, and not just like on a development level, but also like on an individual level, like, all the regulations that we have in the different counties, in Dallas and the surrounding counties, is you have time from inspections to, certifications, and like it's hard to build a home in Dallas.
Permitting,
in DFW, and permitting. nothing is easy on home builders. So, and that's why I think cost is going to continue to drive up, but they're doing a lot of stuff on the backside of things to be able to help continue to move homes. Fortunately, right now they're still paying agent commissions. I think there's going to come a time where that's going to be.
Yeah. Not in all markets. I know there's parts of Florida where that got wiped out really fast.
There's other areas where they don't at all. And so there's going to be, and they're taking money that they used to put towards marketing and they're putting it back into the transaction. So you have them doing bulk tape so with their lenders. So whether they're in-house or they're joint venture partners, they're doing bulk tape buys to where they're buying down rates to a certain level.
There's a billboard outside our office here marketing a 4.7% rate for new home construction.
Yeah. Wow, yeah.
Yeah. So they're guaranteeing a number of transactions going to somebody. And instead of saying, hey, I could lose X amount of dollars by not moving these units, I'm going to take a quarter of what that loss would be and put it towards, helping the transaction. There's a lot of crazy stuff going on the build side that, it's hard to play in that builder's world. And when you have a mixture of a bunch of first time home buyers plus builders doing this, and then I'm surprised that it hasn't gone further, because the number of people that probably got under contract in 2022 that weren't able to close in 2023, I'd love to see the data of what the actual numbers are, because it's probably insane.
All right, gentlemen, I've been dying to do an episode like this for a while. I think we might call this a lender and a realtor walk into a bar or something like that. I feel like that's a good title.
That's great.
But we talk so much about real estate sales and loan origination. I'm thrilled to be able to bring in two professionals who practice the trade every day. Kyle, Dan, thank you all so much for joining me today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thanks, Clay.
Hey folks, this is Clayton Collins, CEO at HW Media. I invited Brendan Ath to give you a little more detail on HousingWire Annual. This is HousingWire's mortgage-focused event that covers everything in mortgage finance, from origination, servicing, secondary markets, and partnerships with real estate, title, and valuation professionals.
So you have people like Frank Martell, the CEO of loanDepot, our own Logan Modashami, lead analyst over at HousingWire, Sandra Thompson, FHFA director, and even Selim Kham, who's the CEO of Thrive Mortgage. These executives are taking the stage. What are they talking about that actually applies to you? So they're addressing, how are they staying profitable in this business? How are they creating communication flows from the top down and making sure that everyone through the company is driving that business forward? How are they making the tough decisions? It's a tougher market, but even though it's a tougher market, there's still people who are growing. So how are they winning that market share? And what does their mindset have to do with that? And so two of the big buzzwords that we use are actionable items and insights and walking away. But that is something we actually took and then went a level deeper to make sure we're creating those opportunities for you guys, whether it's on the pickleball court or staying after in the session to chat with these leaders at these companies. It's the people you want to be in the room with. You want to be surrounded by people who are growing, because when I leave a conference, it's that energy that you want to take with you back to your business as you build up more strategy for 2024 and beyond. That's why we call it the starting line, right? You're starting your business for the future. So that's where I would kind of touch on to start with.
If you want to learn more about HousingWire Annual, visit housingwireannual.com. Or if you're on HousingWire, you can click the events tab and see all of our events, HousingWire Annual included. This event is October 10th through 12th in Austin, Texas. We're bringing you a special promo. I'm not even going to tell you what it is on air right now. You have to DM me. So you can hit me up on LinkedIn, Clayton Collins, CEO of HW Media, easy to find, or on Instagram at Housing Clayton. So check us out. Join us at HousingWire Annual. Thank you. See you in Austin. Thank you so much for listening to the Housing News Podcast. Please take a few seconds to rate Housing News on Apple Podcasts. It means a lot for the show, and we really do appreciate and listen to your feedback. Also, we're gearing up for HousingWire Annual in October. Please visit housingwire.com/events for full details about our big annual event in Austin, Texas.